There's a better world that's coming. Tell you why. There's a better world that's coming. Tell you why. We will beat 'em on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world that's coming. Tell you why. Better world is a-coming, don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free, there's a better world is a-coming, don't you see?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Rick Spezak, News Director of Progressive News Network. I want to welcome you once again. It's a summer season upon us. Lots of news, but some of it is, in fact, good. And tonight we've got some great guests for you. Everyone's got a good story to tell. Everyone is working hard every day to make this a better world. First, we've got Stacy Sherwood, who's a turtle activist, especially a sea turtle activist, who's working with the state and with the other naturalists and wildlife people to help sustain the sea turtle population. She's got a story to tell that will give you lots of hope and also ideas on how you can help and take part in rescuing sea turtles and protecting them from the foolish and the casual. And next, we've got Pam Treadwell, who is a bee activist. She works to rescue bees. Her special focus today is going to be talking about how we can have our part in rescuing the pollinators and making sure that we have pollinators for the future, because as you know, the pesticide people continue to put poison on the land, on our plants, which affects all the way up the food chain. People who think that the pesticide or the herbicide only sits on the plant and then disappears magically, they ought to stay in touch with BP, because BP also had that same magical solution to all the danger they put into the Gulf of Mexico. After Pam, we've got Mary Higgins, who's running for House District 82. She's going to be telling us about her campaign and her agenda, why she wants to be elected, and how she plans on helping. Then we've got Ray Siemens, who has been an activist for a long, long time, and he's going to tell us about the work that he's doing now. And we've also got Karina Voudre, who is going to be talking to us about native plants and how you can have natural space around you and native plants that use up only an appropriate amount of water from our aquifer in great danger. So Stacy Sherwood, Pam Treadwell, Mary Higgins, Ray Siemens, Karina Voudre, got a really wonderful set of guests for you tonight. And now, the news. And of course, as always, if you go to AveryVoice.com, you can get more details and the links to all the news that we bring you and more, because we don't always get a chance to cover all the stories. So the first story I want you to know about is used on Detroit's water activist. LRAD, long-range acoustic device, was used to disperse a rally at Hart Plaza in downtown Detroit on Friday, July 18, 2014, at 2:43 p.m. There's been previous use of LRAD in Detroit on May 1, 2012, when Occupy Detroit gathered on the public sidewalks outside the Grand Circus Park after the park closed hours of 10 p.m. The use in 2012 was as a public address. The use in 2014 was to cause distress to those hearing the sound. You can hear the sound emitted in the video footage in the link, but those who were on the platform to speak felt vibrations throughout their body and some clutched at their chests during the deployment, which lasted about 2 minutes. The crowd was dispersed by the sound. It had been having a peaceful assembly with speakers discussing the human right to water and the hypocrisy of Michigan's emergency manager law, PA 436 of 2012, which was brought forth after the public voted down the emergency manager law, PA 4, during the November elections. Rally speakers brought the position of Detroit is being ruled by an implanted dictator who is dismantling sections of local government. Those assembled resist the interests of Kevin Orr, the EM of Detroit, in moving the public water to a privatized service. They also resist privatization of all public services placed in the trust of our local government to provide for the well-being of its citizens. Detroit has seen public lighting turned over to a new authority, which has darkened major streets such as Gratiot, Grand River, and Woodward, streets where pedestrian deaths have occurred at night during the past year. LRAD, by the way, has received an order worth $550,000 from the Air National Guard to ship LRAD 100K devices this quarter. With this order, LRAD systems will be in use by every major force of the Department of Defense. Tom Brown, president and CEO of LRAD, told Government Security News the Air National Guard will be deploying the LRAD 100 system throughout the country to support and assist civil authorities in the event of severe natural or man-made disasters. LRAD systems have proven highly effective in communicating warnings, instruction, and commands over wide areas before, during, and aftermath of catastrophes. As well as being powerful communication devices, LRADs emit piercing sounds that amount to nothing less than auditory torture and serve to disperse people from geographical areas, breaking up demonstrations and large gatherings. Larger versions of the LRAD previously were used against Somali pirates and insurgents in Afghanistan and are increasingly being deployed inside America. In 2009, San Diego County Sheriff's Department deployed an LRAD against people going to a town hall meeting. Senator Elizabeth Warren takes her fight against the RIG system. Senator Elizabeth Warren took her fight against the RIG system to Netroots Nation, gathering in Detroit Friday morning, saying that she's fighting back, and if we, the people, push back and fight hard, we can win. Outside the hall, people were passing out ready for Warren hats and signs. Inside the hall, hats and signs were everywhere. Fighting back against a RIG system was the theme of Warren's rousing speech to Netroots. She began by briefly telling the story of how the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, came into being. She had the idea for the agency to start talking about it. People told her it was a great idea and badly needed, but said to her, don't do it because the biggest banks in the country will hate you and you will lose. And she said they had it half right. They spend more than $1 million a day for more than a year lobbying against the financial reforms. But we fought back and we won. We won because you and a zillion other people across the country got in the fight. We said that we the people have this agency and we won. And now we have the CFPB and it's already returned $5 billion to people that big financial firms tried to steal. Warren's message was that we should never miss the central point of the story, that CFPB is proof how democracy can work in the 21st century. It's proof that if we push back against the biggest, strongest, most ruthless lobbying effort in the country, if we push back and fight hard, we can win. We can't win every time, and we're still trying to figure out how we can make it all work. We don't win every time, but we're learning to win. We'll keep at it, we'll fight, and we'll win. That's my message today. A rigged system. Warren moved from there to what's happening in the country today. She said companies naturally look for profits, but many of them have another plan. They use their money and their connections to try to capture Washington and rig the rules in their favor. That's what we're up against. That's what democracy is up against. She compared what happens to regular people with what happens to wealthy elites at the top, saying, a kid gets caught with a few ounces of pot and goes to jail, but big banks launder drug money and no one gets even arrested, not just big banks. Warren said it's not just big banks. She called on the audience to look at the choices the federal government makes, such as piling debt on students. Then she went straight after Republicans as the enablers of the rigging and the corruption. Instead of building a future, this country is bleeding tax loopholes. Billion-dollar corporations squeeze out deals with foreign countries, renounce their citizenship, and pay no taxes. How's this happen? They have the lobbyists and the Republican friends in Congress to protect every loophole and every privilege. The game is rigged, and it isn't right. Rigged trade deals. Take a look at what's happening with trade deals, she said. Trade negotiations are like Christmas morning for the biggest corporations. Warren described how corporations can bypass pollution and wage laws. The corporations can get special gifts through trade negotiations they would never get from Congress because the trade negotiations are secret and held behind closed doors. The corporations are all smacking their lips at the possibility of rigging the upcoming trade deals. Stop and ask yourself, why are the trade negotiations secret? I have had people involved in the process actually tell me, why, if the public knew what was going on, they would be opposed. My view is if the public would be opposed, then they shouldn't have those trade deals. It's everywhere. Warren said that the tilt in the playing field is everywhere. When conservatives talk about opportunity, they mean opportunity for rich men to get richer and the powerful to get more powerful. They don't mean do something about student loan debt or help someone unemployed get back on their feet. Deep down, this is a fight over values. Conservatives have their powerful friends, will, and they will continue to be guided by their internal motto of, I got mine, the rest are you, or on your own. My motto is we all do better when we work together and invest in the future. The country gets stronger when we invest in helping people succeed. These are progressive values, and these are the values we're willing to fight for. Then she went into a refrain. We believe that Wall Street needs stronger rules and tougher enforcement, and we're willing to fight for it. We believe in science, and that means we have a responsibility to protect the planet, and we will fight for it. We believe the internet shouldn't be rigged to benefit big corporations, and we will fight for it. We believe that fast food workers deserve a livable wage, and that means we'll fight alongside them. We believe that students are entitled to get a good education without being crushed by debt, and we will fight for it. We believe that after a lifetime of work, people are entitled to retire with dignity, and that means protect Social Security and Medicaid, and we will fight for it. We believe, and I can't believe I have to say this in 2014, equal pay for equal work, and we will fight for it. We believe that equal means equal, and that true in the workplace, at the home, and everywhere, and we will fight for it. We believe that immigration has made the country strong and vibrant, and we will fight for it. And we believe that corporations are not people, and we will fight for it. Right here in this room, this is where it happens, a 21st century democracy. This is the future of America, and this is where we decide that we the people will fight together and do that. We will fight together, and we're going to win. And it is reported that the crowd went nuts. Over a million messages calling for net neutrality. Oh, by the way, I got to tell you, we attended the celebration of the victory in Naples last weekend, and it was fantastic. There were environmental activists, water activists, wildlife activists, human rights activists, all together to celebrate the immense victory of kicking the Dan Hughes Corporation out, getting the state to do its job, getting the county to stand with the people of the county. And all of this because people said, no, you're not going to walk over us. You're not going to pollute the water. You're not going to destroy our lives. You are not going to do it. You're not going to own all that oil and destroy our lives and the Everglades and the watershed to make a quick buck. It's not going to happen. And thank goodness people stood up. I want you to celebrate with me and toast the good people of the West Coast and beyond who all work together. But the battle's not over. It's reported in the news that the Dan A. Hughes Corporation is going to be suing the state and trying to get that those permits reopened. So let's all stand together and protect the water, protect the Everglades. There was a big Everglades conference this weekend. We're going to have a report on it next week. So hopefully you'll tune in. And now more news about net neutrality. Over a million messages called for net neutrality from the FCC. Companies should not be able to pay the internet service providers so that their site reach users faster. That's the general consensus of the 1,067,779 comments it filed with the Federal Communications Commission before the initial comment period of the open internet proceedings came to a close on Friday. Issues related comments on the government's agency site rarely surpass 100, but a proposal that could threaten the internet equality has united many Americans and prompted them to speak out. Even the former Daily Show correspondent John Oliver took up the issue, and Oliver did a 13-minute rant about net neutrality on his HBO show. Last week, Tonight with John Oliver inspired so many people to comment on the FCC site that the government entity announced on Twitter that it was having technical difficulties. I urge you to maintain net neutrality and not give the forces of big money, special interest, and self-interested partisanship, said commentator Gregory Robe, a retired captain of the U.S. Air Force, wrote to the FCC chairman Tom Wheeler. I depend on free access to information that could be blocked if you change the rules. The Electronic Freedom Foundation, of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, an internet rights advocacy group, recently spoke out in defense of net neutrality as well. The FCC's practice poses a dire threat to the engine of innovation that has allowed hackers, companies, and kids in their college dorms to make the internet what we know and love today. staffer April Glasser wrote on the EFF website. FCC spokesman Mark Wigfield said in a statement that the agency would make sure to account for all submitted opinions according to the blog E Pluralis Unum. Now, users are now able to reply to submitted comments on the FCC website through September 10th. After that date, the agency will make a decision about whether it will regulate the way Internet service providers manage web traffic. And ladies and gentlemen, we have our first guest, and I know you'll join me in welcoming Ms. Sherwood. Stacy, welcome.
Hi, Richard. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's all pleasure as always. So tell me, how are our friends from the sea doing these days?
Well, actually, I'm glad you asked. I do have several sea turtle updates, some of which are a bit shocking, and most of them have actually been in the news recently, so they might sound a little familiar. The first is about the Indian River Lagoon, which has been very polluted and just dumped in for years. I know some great people that are working to clean up the dumping of chemicals into the lagoon and also trying to stop the releases from Lake Okeechobee. Now, a lot of people don't realize that the Indian River Lagoon, of course, is important to our manatees and dolphins and fish, but it's actually really important for our juvenile green sea turtles, which unfortunately hang around the shoreline and the lagoons the first 20 years of their life, so they get a lot of exposure to human activity, like the chemical dumping, and a lot of them are ending up with these really deadly fibropapilloma tumors. It looks like pastel cauliflower. A lot of times they'll find them on their neck or their flippers, and it can cause them death. And so we really need to clean up the Indian River Lagoon and stop all that dumping. Also, a lot of people, it's not just a local issue, which people might think. A lot of people around the state travel to the lagoon, you know, to camp there and picnic and fish and swim, and they don't know how dirty and toxic the water is to them as well. In fact, all of Florida water is really polluted. So I would call upon the governor and the state ag commissioner to really stop the dumping and to clean it up. It's important to our green sea turtles and really just all of our marine life. The second update is rather shocking, actually, and it's kind of like breaking news. It just came out a couple of days ago, and that is Obama opening up the eastern shore to drilling, which we've never had. And that will just destroy our marine environment, not just sea turtles, but a lot of the food they eat. And when we think of sea turtles, they're not just nesting here. They come here to mate, and their hatchings are here. So they're actually here for about 8 months out of the year. So our marine environment is really, really important that we keep it healthy and viable. For many sea turtle species that don't even nest here, like our hawksbills, depend on our reefs being healthy, but they don't nest here. And also Florida's eco-economy, it's a bulk of the state's income, is inherent on a clean environment. So, again, I would really call on all Floridians to support solar and to call for an immediate ban on any kind of drilling. The irony is we could get all of the lights off in Florida, stop the coastal development, put a ban on fishing. We could do all these other things. But if we expand drilling in the ocean, it's not going to matter. It's such a destructive industry. It's going to really crash our struggling sea turtle population, regardless of any other measures that we might get involved with. And as far as oil spills, they always occur, and they can never be cleaned up. So really, the only form of prevention is to just not have drilling in the first place. I just can't stress that enough. A lot of us are just reeling from this news about drilling.
Stacy, let me ask you a question. I thought this was an environmental-friendly president.
Well, I could talk for hours on all of that. I have to say Obama is as bad as Bush, really. I mean, he came out publicly to support whaling. I know he's made some talk about Iceland shouldn't do it, but he's done nothing about Japan, and they're the biggest whalers. He's done nothing as far as the wild horses being round up and killed and shipped to Mexico for food. And as far as the Gulf of Mexico, you know, barely a mention, that has never been cleaned up. Well, the thing is you can't remove oil from water. That's the problem.
But
a lot of people
Stacy,
don't know. Yeah.
Help me understand one more thing. I thought that BP said that all that oil and Corexit just disappeared like magic.
No, Richard, no. BP has a great PR machine. They use Corexit for 3 years, which is a disbursement. And a disbursement disperses. Like if I had a crowd of people and I didn't want them to see what I was doing, I would try to get them to disperse, you know, go away. So the crowd wouldn't be so noticeable. That's what was done. That was sprayed in the Gulf for years. So instead of flying over and seeing those nasty, frightening chunks of oil, you don't see it as much, you know, out of sight, out of mind. But the oil, most of the oil is at the bottom of the Gulf. It's buried under sand. Some of it has dispersed out through the Gulf Stream. But any oil that's ever been dumped into the ocean, or well, any liquid has ever been dumped in the ocean, you just can't remove. If you take a glass of water and you drop just one little drop of oil in it, you'll notice that the only way to get the oil out of that water is to dump the water out of the glass. That's really the only way. Anyone tells you otherwise just doesn't know what they're talking about. As far as BP goes, a lot of people don't know that they were granted more leases to do the same exact thing in the Gulf of Mexico. So environmental president, yeah, no. And like I said, we're literally reeling over the even mention of opening up the eastern shoreline. I think it was like from Maryland down to Florida. I mean, it's just crazy. Very destructive industry. And, you know, why our state, Florida, would even entertain the idea is insane. That's the problem. That's why I say the only way to prevent these oil spills is funny. Just don't even go there. Just don't have the drilling in the first place.
Are there organizations of Oceana or Sierra Club? Are they going to try to fight this drilling?
Well, like I said, the news was just announced a few days ago. So yeah, there are a lot of groups. I really hope that Florida unites, because this isn't just something that would affect sea turtles. It would affect, like I said, our economy, the fishing industry, basically everybody that lives in this state. And you can see how the people on the West Coast are suffering, and even on in the Panhandle, in the other states, wherever there's been an oil spill. And you know, a lot of people just think, oh, it's so crazy, it won't happen, or there won't be an oil spill, or they could clean it up, and they really have no idea. And also, when BP came around, because I'm on state permits to work with sea turtles and they nest on the beach, I was very aware that Florida, to this day, still has no real emergency contingency plan if we have an oil spill. In other words, if there was oil washing up on the beach tomorrow when I go out to survey it, I would have no idea what to do. None of us have ever been given training other than to call FWC, but really nobody knows what to do. And it's just kind of hold your breath and hope it doesn't happen, but that's not really a good way to run things for the animals or the people. It's really a big issue. So really anybody that's concerned really needs to pressure the state to just not do it. There have been some local towns, some ordinances, I think up north, who have passed these, you know, no drilling, but it's not something that a little town can do, you know, like St. Augustine or Jacksonville or Boca or whatever. The state needs to come in and say, we cannot have this offshore. It's just going to destroy the environment, our economy. You know, we live for tourism, and I just don't see people coming down and swimming in dirty water with destroyed reefs. I don't see people spending $1 million on a condo on the beach to see oil rigs. That doesn't seem logical. And they can go to New Zealand or Bermuda or someplace else. So, yeah, it's shocking, but it could happen. They're already doing seismic testing, and that's a whole other problem. There was a lot of seismic testing and sonar being used a few months ago in the Gulf of Mexico, and we had dozens of whales that stranded and died. They were at the same time in the same area this was going on. So like with the oil spills, we've known for years that if there's seismic testing, it will strand the whales, and obviously a stranded pod is pretty much a dead pod. And you can imagine what it would do to other animals. I mean, this is noise that we can't always hear. It's at a different frequency. But if you listen, if you're an animal in the ocean, it's really noisy, like a rock concert down there. It's very, very noisy. And if you depend on your own sonar or just hearing to find food or mate or just a quiet place to rest for a moment, it's becoming very, very difficult. So this is something that's really going to affect a lot of species, including our own.
Yeah, we had some people talking to us about the sonar damage done to whales and dolphins on the East Coast when they were doing that testing. And I apologize for getting you off the subject of turtles. How's the season coming so far?
Well, actually, that relates to it, though, because actually turtles need a clean, safe, relatively quiet marine environment. So anything that's bad for turtles would be bad for whales, fish, sharks, dolphins. They all live in the same environment. So it needs to, if it's bad for one, it's bad for all kind of thing.
Sure, sure, absolutely. And, of course, I was being facetious about the BP oil and correction disappearing. I was as shocked to hear them even try to make a claim like that. But in this science-unfriendly society we seem to be living in, I guess many people may have been confused by that. Certainly no one with any science would be. So how's the hatchling season coming?
Well, actually, it's that's another issue too. Well, it is mid-season, so we don't have all of our stats in. However, I can tell you that the nesting data is not as high for loggerheads. I'll just talk about the loggerheads right now. Is not as high as we had expected. Of course, there's this is just one season, and we have to see what the next couple of seasons bring. There's a natural ebb and flow. But we were expecting more nests than last year, and we're not there yet. So there might be a mad rush for the loggerheads to, get in the last few nests, but their season is pretty much coming to an ending as far as nesting. So like I said, we'll have to see in the next couple of years and see if it stays the same or decreases, because that would obviously signal that the sea turtles are in trouble again, because they were, they were pretty much maintaining and going up in nesting up until 2000, and then from 2000 to 2009, it was just down, down, down. Then in 2010, we had like record number loggerheads nesting, far more than the previous 10 years. And then in 2012, we had a huge amount of loggerheads. So like I said, it's just one year, so we have to kind of hold our breath and see what the next couple of years do. But that, that's something to definitely be concerned about, whether or not, because loggerheads are migratory and they're global. So when we talk about these kinds of species, we can't just look at, I work in two counties, so I can't just look at what's going on in Broward or Palm Beach. I have to look at the whole state and the world to see what's going on. We've had a lot of oil spills, a lot more sonar use, seismic testing, a decrease in their food supply. So all these things factor into it, huge amount of plastic. So like I said, it could just be this year that it was just less than we thought. But if this continues, then that means that they could be in trouble again. As far as the greens go, we had a crazy year last year that really nobody can figure out. Scientifically, it didn't really make any sense. We had the most amount of greens nesting on our beaches since like the 50s. And I say that because, again, there's an ebb and a flow, so we figured an up year. We didn't think that we'd have twice as much as we'd ever seen. And since sea turtles had pretty much been eaten to extinction, they were no longer nesting on our beaches from like the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. We were doing controlled releases. We were basically going to the Caribbean, taking the fresh eggs and putting them into controlled hatcheries for about 20 years. And then in the 1980s, the first batch had finally reached maturity and started coming to nest. So we've had an increase in greens since then, even though globally they're crashing. But what explained last year, nobody can figure out, because sea turtles are born, they have like these, they're kind of like crystals in their brains. It's kind of like their internal GPS. So they would come back to their natal beach, and, not a whole lot of storms last year. I mean, nothing really out of the blue that would make us say, oh, that's why they all came here. So we'll have to wait and see if next year brings another crazy nesting for greens, or if that was just a one-time thing. Also, the leatherbacks have been steadily increasing since they first started nesting here in 1996. kind of a down year for them this year, so hopefully they will have a better increase next year. But we'll know better a couple months after the season ends when all of the stats are in. But so far it looks like they're maintaining, which is good. But we have to wait and see if they're going to continue the rise or if they're going to decline. And like I said, with the news about the oil drilling, that could really be a problem because we really have spent a lot of time and money trying to increase these three very struggling populations. And it would be really a crime if all of a sudden all of our hard work the last 30 years had just, you know, been for nothing if we put them into a real toxic soup of oil. So that's another thing to kind of, it's on the radar now, and so we have to kind of be vigilant about that.
Stacy, let me ask another question. If people wanted to help, if they wanted to pitch in somehow, what would you suggest for them?
Well, actually, there's quite a few things. I would say, call your local representative, but also call the governor and tell them, you know, we want solar, we want wind, we don't want anything other than oil drilling, because that's just going to be detrimental. And like I said, that anyone in the state, that definitely needs the state. Also, we want to end to dumping these toxic chemicals into our waterways. Not only do they cause our marine life to become sick, but those of us that swim in the water, snorkel, even just hanging around having a picnic, we're affected by all of this, and we really need to clean that up. Two other issues that people can get involved with. One is a huge issue in Southeast Florida, especially in Broward County where you have coastal development, is the light issue. And we have what I call death by light, which might sound like the title for a mystery novel, but it's really no mystery why millions of hatchlings have died because they follow this artificial light on the west side instead of going east to the ocean. And again, this is something anybody can do. You don't have to live just on the actual ocean to cause this problem. If you go down, especially like in Fort Lauderdale, Channel 10 just did a story about light pollution down in Fort Lauderdale, and they actually talked to one of the owners of, I think it's Bunny's, he owns a t-shirt shop. So he's actually on the west side of A1A, but his store is all lit up, and it shines on the beach, and people don't realize that even if you're across the street, if you have bright light, that they're unshielded, even if you have just like a chandelier on and the curtain is open, that all reflects to the beach, and it just can light up the beach. Also, even if you don't live on the beach, you can help spread the message. Hey, if you're going to stay in a hotel, you know, close the curtains, tell the hotel to tell their customers to close the curtains and to not come to the beach with white flashlights. So there's a lot of basically education, you know, PSAs, that people can help spread the message, even if
Stacy,
they don't live on the beach.
Well, thank you so very much. I really appreciate your update. And it's such a great work that you do protecting our friends, the sea turtles. Thanks so much for your information. And come back at the end of the season. Let us know how the numbers turned out, okay?
I will. Actually, in about an hour, I'm going to go out to my zone, Lauderdale by the Sea, and I've got about 5 sea turtle nests I could hatch tonight. So I'll be out working to make sure they go towards the ocean and not the lights tonight.
Okay. You take care, dear.
Great.
Thanks,
Richard.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, our next guest, Miss Pam Treadwell. Pam, welcome.
Hi, Richard. How are you doing today?
Just beautiful.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to, anytime I have an opportunity to talk to people about bees and pollinators, I love to do it. And I started out, I'm just a regular homemaker, an artist, a lifetime artist, and I started beekeeping about 5-6 years ago, and I happened to get some bees in my wall after I had started beekeeping, and I called around and called to companies that advertise live removal, but every time I called and got someone over, they would always do the bait and switch and try and tell me that the bees were Africanized and that I should probably kill them. And since the bees weren't doing anything, they were very calm and well-behaved bees, I kept trying to just remove them alive. Long story short, I went to a local beekeeping club, which is what I recommend to everybody who wants to find out more about beekeeping and bees is to find your local beekeeping club. That's the best source to find a mentor and to get information. I went there and I found my mentor, who happened to be a live removal beekeeper for the city of Winter Park at that time. And I started doing it myself, and I've been doing that now for about 3 years. And while I love honeybees, and I encourage everybody, if you get a swarm at your house or they move into your wall, to call a beekeeper first. Do not call an extermination company. Call a beekeeper, because extermination companies, their technicians are taught about pesticides and things like that. They are not taught a lot about bee biology and how the bees require their comb to survive. But a beekeeper, when they come over, they're going to, of course, try and remove the bees alive, but they're also going to try to procure that comb, because honeybees, they need their comb to survive. Not only do they keep their brood and food there, but it's the bees and the comb act as a giant superorganism together. And they need that comb, and so you need to remove the comb. If you're really wanting to remove the bees and take them someplace, relocate them live someplace else, they really need that comb. But
that's very interesting.
I really wanted to talk, as excited as I am about honeybees, I really wanted people to know something that I learned about bees. Once I got into honeybees, I found out that North America, we have over 4,000 native bees, and in the state of Florida alone, we have over 300 native bees, a little over 300 native bees. Honeybees are not native to North America. They came over with the pilgrims in the 1600s. They were known as white man flies. They got loose. They were known as white man flies. They got loose. They have been feral in this country for 400 years. People have been catching them forever. And there was no stigma to owning and catching feral bees and putting them in your backyard. There was no problem with that until recently, within, say, the last 20 years, we've really had the Africanization. The bees that came up through Brazil, up through South America and Mexico, came up into the states, entering first in Texas. The Africanized bees, they're a lot more aggressive. They have a different style of colonization. And, they're a lot more aggressive. And any time that you mess with a honeybee nest, any kind of honeybee, a domestic honeybee or an Africanized bee, when you mess with the nest, that's when you're going to get the action, the bee action. That's when you're going to, that's when you hear, when you read in the newspapers or see on the news about somebody being attacked, they most likely somehow stumbled into a nest or stepped on the nest or something like that, and that's how that happens. And that is typical behavior. That is not Africanized behavior. That's typical bee behavior. The difference with Africanized bees is that when you leave the area, they're going to follow you, compared to regular honeybees who will sting you in that area where you are. But Africanized bees will keep following you and following you, and that's where it can be really super dangerous. I know I'm rambling a little bit, but what I wanted to get to was the native bees. Native bees, you're not going to have any kind of trouble like that. I've been talking, teaching a lot of honeybee classes to people and talking about honeybee safety and things like that, and a lot of people are very concerned. There's a lot of people that are very interested in beekeeping. They want to get involved, but they're not interested in wrangling with bees, or maybe they don't want to buy all the equipment. It does get a little bit expensive, and I wanted to tell them that there are many, many, many native bees out there right now that are very easy to take care of, that do just as much pollinating as honeybees do. Actually, they do more pollinating because they're specialized. A lot of these bees are specialized. We overlook them. Often they look like flies or moths or wasps, but they're actually bees. And they do a lot of specialized pollinating. Like we have a blueberry bee here in the state that specializes in pollinating blueberry bushes, And these bees are in dire need of native plants, because a lot of these bees only lay their eggs or these, and also pollinators. When we're talking about pollination of plants, we're also including pollinators like butterflies and moths and flies, beetles, butterflies, things like that. They're out there as well. But these native bees, you can put these little native bee houses in your backyard. You can find them online. If you Google native bee house, they're everywhere. You can buy them on Amazon already made for you and put them in your backyard and provide habitat for them. And there's a lot of things that you can do that are easy ways to be bee conservators, or what I would like to call a bee steward. I don't think of myself as a bee lady. I think of myself as a steward. That term beekeeper is a little bit of a misnomer because the bees kind of come and go as they please. You're really just helping out. But
let me ask you a question. The native bees that you're talking about, can you describe them? What color are they? What size are they?
All kinds of colors and sizes. You've got green bees and little brown striped bees, and we have carpenter bees and mason bees and leafcutter bees. These three bees are very common in Florida backyards, and they do a whole lot of pollinating. And next time you're out there, look at the plants, and you'll see that they look similar to honeybees, but they're not honeybees. Honeybees are a little bit on the fuzzy side. They're kind of fuzzy. They're golden colored, and then you have the fuzzier big bee, which is the bumblebee. And those are really docile as well, and they do pollinating as well. But bumblebees tend to live in nests in the ground, and they're they can build their nests in the ground. And so when people are mowing their lawns and clearing away all the brush, we're also clearing away possible habitat for these bees. I wanted to talk about a little bit of a tiny list. A way that people can help support the pollinators in their backyard.
Please do.
And I really love not having to spend any money to do it. You can just use the things that are around the house. You can help create diverse habitats because all of these bees are a little bit diverse. And like piles of logs, leave them there. If you've got a pile of logs in the corner or an old tree, they call those slags. Those are excellent condos for wildlife. Not only do all types of bees and insects live in these, but birds and other kinds of critters live in these trees. They provide a habitat. But we tend to be, we're so quick to clean all that away, and we have a certain mindset about our landscaping these days that it looks good to us, but it doesn't leave any habitat for these animals to hide in, They also need plenty of food, and their favorite food, native bees and pollinators, are butterflies. They love native plants, and specifically untreated native plants. I don't know if the listeners have heard this, but we have a problem with our big box garden stores across the country, namely Home Depot and Lowe's. They are selling neonicotinoid treated plants. This is across the country, and in North America alone we have over 4,000 Home Depot and Lowe's stores, and all of these stores are selling these systemically treated plants. And here we are, the regular homeowner saying, I'm going to do something good for my yard, going over there and buying these plants, not knowing that they're bringing back plants that have been systemically treated with pesticides. And when you install these plants in your yard, they're going to continue killing these insects that feed on their sap, nectar, and on their pollen. And it's all over Facebook, and it's a little bit online, but if people don't go to some of these places, they're not going to know it. And I've found that the majority of people I tell this to, they don't know this, and it's really super bad. And what happens is these plants, for the life of the plant, will continue to kill any insect that feeds on it while in your yard. And the root system also kills the little elemental creatures in the soil as well. They're very, very toxic. And Home Depot has responded finally after everybody, you know, getting on them about this. Lowe's has said nothing yet, but Home Depot has responded by creating an Echo Options program. It's a website to address these concerns about these toxic plants that they're selling, and they're claiming that by the fourth quarter of this year that all neonicotinoid plants will be labeled in the garden center.
Well, that was my next question. I was going to ask, do they label them? Probably not, just like they don't label other GM products.
That's the problem, Richard. I don't know why they just don't get rid of them altogether. And you can go to this website. You can go to the Home Depot website, and they have a section in there that is where you can give feedback. It's information@homedepot.com. And tell them, we don't want neonicotinoid-treated plants. You know that neonicotinoids, they're a synthetic version of nicotine, and this chemical, along with a few other pesticides, has already been banned across Europe. They already know that they don't want this in their plants, and you know, because they realize how devastating this is for the pollinators. And also, as these pollinators, these bees and flies and butterflies are feeding on these plants, they are kind of at the bottom of the food chain. And so here come birds and bats and toads and lizards and other creatures that feed on these insects, and now they're dying as well. So that's something that I think people that love their pollinators and want to have a nice, clean, organic yard, they should know that. And I would ask that you go to Home Depot's site or go to Lowe's site and tell them that we don't want neonicotinoid-treated plants here anymore. We don't need them. That's a big concern that I have.
Wow, that's amazing. I'd never heard that before. I mean, you know, you hear about the danger of the pesticide, but you assume that you have the option of applying it or not, thank goodness. But now to find this out, that's really shocking. Thank you, Pam.
Right. These plants are treated as seeds. They're either treated when they're a seed and the toxin absorbs in through the seed shell and it gets into the plant cells. And then as the plant grows, every single cell of the plant is producing this pesticide, or it's treated and then the plant soaks it up. You know, you can go to any store. There's still this neonicotinoid stuff, namely Roundup. It's everywhere. And at our local Home Depot, they've got like five different displays there with Roundup. And I'm also a part of a local Echo Canoe cleanup crew, and I've seen the devastation that this Roundup does in yards that surround lake areas. It kills everything. It creates algae blooms. It's a real nightmare. And so it's really my concern, though, is just killing off all of the pollinators and then the small animals that feed on and depend on these on the bees and these other pollinators for food.
Well, more and more people are aware of the neonicotinoids, both of their danger here and they're being banned in Europe. But this is new information, and I really thank you for it. It's amazing. What else should people do who want to help the pollinators and kind of push back against this neonicotinoid problem just in their yards? Just let native plants go? What kind of plants should they look for? What kind of native plants should they start adding to their garden?
Well, you definitely want to go to an organic garden center. You want to go to a place that's selling native untreated plants. And people will always ask me, well, how will I know? They will advertise, because they know people are looking for these plants more and more these days. As we become aware of this garbage that these garden centers like Home Depot and Lowe's are selling us, as more and more people become aware, you know, they are also selling treated tomato plants and all kinds of, you know, Home Depot, it sells food plants as well, corn, tomatoes, things like that, and those plants are also treated. And so people are trying to get away from that, and so seek out a local organic garden center that advertises untreated plants, and they will be advertising that, as they know people are seeking that out. And you want to go for native plants that are local You know, because another thing people don't understand is a lot of these insects, these native bees and butterflies also, they require specific native plants to be able to lay their eggs on. It's the only thing that their little caterpillars will eat. It's these specific native plants. And so they're very important to, you know, sustaining our pollinator ecosystem.
We have a guest later on in the evening, Karina Vaudre, who is a landscape architect and native plant advocate. So I can talk to her. We'll get her to give us some more information on the plants. But go ahead, tell us more about bees.
Also, please provide some type of clean water source in your yard, not, you know, for all of the bees and pollinators. What you're going to definitely want to do, though, is put pebbles or sticks or something like that in the water so they can have a place to roost while they're drinking. Bees can't swim. They will drown in your bird bath if you don't do that. And also, I just, like I mentioned before, please make sure that when you do see a swarm in your yard, people often, you know, let's face it, our media and the movies and the news, they love a good scare story. You know, when somebody gets stung, they make sure that they hype that up. And so the public, unfortunately, when they hear about bees, it's often a horror story, or it's some kind of horrific movie, or they see pesticide services advertised. So it's pounded into the public's brain that they should be afraid of bees, and they should call an exterminator, and they should kill them. And I'm often called to come and collect swarms, and people are a swarm. It's that big blob of bees that you'll see on the side of a wall, or you'll see someplace. It's just the bees. They're not in a nest. It's just the bees. And sometimes I think people are really intimidated by a big undulating ball of insects. You don't know what's going on. It, you know, you're like, oh, my goodness, what's happening? You're thinking something's bad going to happen. But I just want people to know that that is the way that the bee colony is dividing. It's dividing, and that colony, that little swarm that you see, before they left the nest, they create a new queen, and with that new queen, they go off and they fly to their new location. And before they do so, they make sure to pig out on the honey supplies in the nest, so their little bellies are full of honey, and that will sustain them for a day or two till they find their new location. And so when you see a swarm, they're actually very, very docile, and because they have no nest to defend, you are in no danger. So I want to say that, because I feel so bad when people kill swarms, because it's really unnecessary. The swarms are very, very docile. And what you want to do, if you can't collect it and take it somewhere, definitely call a beekeeper. Do not call an exterminator. And because the beekeeper will take it, hive it up, and put it in an apiary somewhere and put them to work.
Well, Pam, thanks so much. Is there a way that people should get in touch with you, or should you just suggest that they go find their local bee club?
Definitely go find a local bee club. There's one in every single county here in Orlando, in Central Florida. We have the Orange Blossom Beekeepers, and it's a great information source. I recommend that highly. And you can come and ask me any questions. I have a page on Facebook, Scout Bee on Facebook. So please feel free to ask me any questions that you might have later there.
Well, thanks again so much for joining us, Pam.
Thank you, Richard. I enjoyed it.
Okay, take care. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. You too.
Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our next guest, Ms. Mary Higgins, has just joined us. Mary, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. Mary, I understand you're running, is it now, it's District 82, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, it is, District 82.
Well, great. Let me ask you first, what was it that got you interested in running for office? And, you know, so many of us just you know, keeping the wolf from the door and having a family and making a living is more than enough to take care of, but it's a special calling for some people that actually want to help. And what was it in your life that brought you to a place where you wanted to help?
Well, you know, I do case management for people with disabilities for a living, and I'm a contractor of the state of Florida. So, you know, I'm pretty aware of what's going on. And under the current administration, things just got so bad for the people with disabilities, for the contractors, and even for the state employees, that I decided I was going to watch a little more closely. So I went up to Tallahassee with the Democratic Women's Club, and I met with the current representative, and I was not impressed at all. And it was probably then that I decided that I needed to run against her.
Well, that's interesting. Were you always interested in politics, or did this come kind of late for you?
No, I've always been interested in politics, and I've always followed politics. But I've always followed politics, and since 2010, things took such a significant turn for the worse here in Florida that I began to watch a lot more closely. And I'm almost 58. My children are all grown and independent, so I have the time to do something like that now too.
Sure. Well, let me ask you this. As you approach the possibility of serving the public, what is your agenda? What are the issues that motivate you, and what would you like to do with those issues?
Well, what I like to say is that, my reason for running is that I want to represent the people and not special interests. That's one of the issues here in District 82 is the discharges from Lake Okeechobee into the Indian River Lagoon. And I believe that there's a direct connection between those discharges that are destroying our lagoon and the fact that we're not able to send the water south as it is really intended to go. There's very powerful special interests, the sugar farmers south
sure.
of the lake. And, we had an opportunity in September to buy that land, and the current administration let that last. So now it was at a fixed rate, and so now I believe we still need to buy that land, but it's going to be at a current market rate, so it's going to cost the taxpayers a lot more money. I think there's a lot of band-aids that we have, and I, you know, all those things are good, but in order to get a sustained solution to that problem, we have to buy that land and send the water south. I also think that one of the worst things that's happened here in Florida in the last two legislative sessions is that we didn't accept Medicaid expansion. And Medicaid expansion is a critical piece to the Affordable Care Act. It's a piece that's going to make the Affordable Care Act work here in Florida. We would be insuring about a million people. It's about a million people that fall into this gap. And I mean, it's the right thing to do. It will certainly even create jobs because it'll be creating jobs in the healthcare field. It'll bring some of those tax dollars our Florida tax dollars back to us through the federal government funding. And it's just absolutely the ethical thing to do and the best thing to do financially for the state. I'm concerned that our education, that schools are not being funded appropriately. Right now they're being funded, if you take into account for inflation, they're being funded at about 75% of what they were in 85% of what they were in 2008, accounting for inflation. And I think that a way that we bring jobs back into Florida is by providing a well-educated workforce. And I'm concerned about the way we're treating our teachers. You know, like they're the problem. when in fact, you know, a lot of times the teachers can't even afford to live in the counties that they teach in because their pay is so low. So those
you
are Medicaid
expenses.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, related to your concern about schools and teachers, do you think that there's enough money in the state budget for to also add a profit motive into school funding? You know, so many on the conservative side seem to think that if there was only a profit motive involved, then schools would be better. Does that make sense to you?
Well, no, and I think, you know, they have a profit motive, and that's why they're starving our public schools and yet giving more money to the to these private corporations that are running these charter schools. The fact is we have the money. We have a $3 billion-plus reserve right now. And I don't consider it a reserve until all of our needs are met. We have the money to bring our public schools up to an appropriate level. We have the money to purchase the land south of the lake. Florida's got, you know, excellent credit, too. I'm not really sure what that huge amount of reserve is for that everybody's bragging about, but our needs are not met. The needs of the people are not met.
You know, another issue that you mentioned I think is kind of interesting, you know, with Governor Scott's former business being Medicare, you would have thought he'd be pretty attuned to the needs for Medicaid expansion. Why do you think they chose not to do Medicaid expansion?
I think that they did it because they wanted the Affordable Care Act to fail. And I think that they did that at the expense of the people of Florida. And I think it's a travesty.
Absolutely. So recently the rivers have gotten a lot of attention. I know Representative Negron suggested a new study, and the Corps of Engineers is postponing any actual work on it, except expanding and rebuilding the dam around the southern edge. Do you think that there is a way we can get the Florida legislature to actually move and do something to improve that terrible pollution that's hitting Indian River?
You know, we've got a couple of things going on. We've got that are already funded that we need to continue to fund, the Tamiami Trail, the C-44 Reservoir. We need to push for STEP, but without purchasing that land south of the lake, we do not have a solution. And the money is there to purchase that land.
I see.
Yes, I think there's something that can be done.
So with the environment and schools and Medicare, is this essentially the thrust of your campaign? Are there any other issues that you want to work on?
Well, we have an issue right here in Martin County. It's not a District 82 issue, but it's a county issue, and it's both of the counties that my district serves. The Children's Services Councils have been placed on the ballot for referendum this year. And it's not a new tax; it's just a reauthorization of the funding. The Children's Services Councils provide services to children that are crucial, and without this funding, some of these places are going to shut down. I mean, I can't imagine. This was also something that Senator Negron pushed. Was that the 8 Children's Services Councils statewide would go on the ballot for referendum. So there's a lot of people working really hard just to get the word out, because we believe that our counties are going to want to continue this, but they have to understand what it is. And so what we're doing is talking about it wherever we go, the reauthorization of the Children's Services Councils. I'm certainly, everywhere I go, also talking about the amendments. Amendment 1 is the Florida Water and Land Legacy Amendment, and I worked on getting a petition signed for that. This will prevent the legislature from spending our conservation money elsewhere. So I'm, you know, we want 100% yes on Amendment 1 in this area. Amendment 2, the medical marijuana amendment, I'm also 100% behind in support of that. So I'm talking to, and Amendment 3 is outrageous, and I'm 100% against it. I'm not even going to go into it. But wherever I go, I've qualified by petition, and I did most of that by knocking on doors. And
good
I'm
for you.
Doing about about 2 hours a day since then, since I qualified. I do about 2 hours a day canvassing the neighborhoods, talking to people about my campaign, and also about other things like the Children's Services Council and the amendments. Because some of it's just about education and letting people know, you know, exactly what they're voting on. And that's important to me.
Well, great. That's really super. It's so nice to hear that you have made so many important issues part of your campaign. If you were to I have to ask you this. If you were going to give a campaign speech and say there was one particular issue that's most important to you, what would that issue be?
You know what? I'm probably going to have to go with accepting Medicaid expansion. This is something that I just believe that it's so unethical that we didn't do this. I mean, we're talking about healthcare, we're talking about our fellow citizens, and we're talking about people's health in the United States of America. And you know, I just can't say enough about it. It's the working poor. It's people that are working hard and can't afford. You know, they don't qualify for Medicaid, but they also don't qualify for, you know, to buy into the insurance and the Affordable Care Act. And I just think it's critical that those people have a chance to have health insurance. We're talking about people's health, and this is the United States. It's very important to me.
Well, excellent. You know the area of Martin County very well, and I was a newcomer back in 2004, and what I found was something that really surprised me, that there wasn't enough attention being paid to the river issues, and I was involved in producing a fishing show, and in the fishing show I found the terrible irony. Here these fishing guides were promoting fishing, promoting different ideal fishing areas and telling people how to catch fish, but they seemed to be oblivious to the fact that the county was warning people from even touching the water. And when I raised that issue with them, they said, well, we're not telling people to touch the water, we're just telling them to eat the fish. And they were somehow completely oblivious to the fact that the fish live in the water. And it just astounded me to no end.
Yeah, I think it's different. I think that it reached a tipping point last summer, and I think that we had 7,000 people out at the lock last summer, and there's another rally for clean water coming up on August 3rd at 10 o'clock at Chip's Park at the Locks, and we're looking for all Floridians who are concerned about having clean water, about our right to have clean water, to come out and support this cause. I think it's changing. I think that's changing, and a lot of young people have become involved in it. And one of the things they'll be doing out at Phipps Park is registering people to vote. And one of the things we want people to see is the solution to this is political. And these decisions are being made up in Tallahassee, and we need a climate change in Tallahassee. It's not going to happen overnight, but we have to start somewhere.
Well, nice turn of the phrase there, my dear. Nice turn of the phrase indeed. The importance of the significance of climate change really just can't be emphasized enough. You know, we talked to a bee person just a moment ago, and we talked to a sea turtle person a few minutes ago, and one of our guests coming up this evening is Karina Vaudrey. She's going to be talking about why it's important to have Florida native plants, because we can't continue to abuse we can't continue to abuse the planet the way we have. And it's so nice to hear someone who's very interested in helping the planet heal and to see these issues, the environmental issues, so important here in Martin County.
Thank you. Thank you.
I know there's some Democratic Party activity coming up in the Martin County area. I imagine you'll be appearing there.
Party activity.
I think there's a meeting coming up in a couple weeks.
Yes, there's at the Democratic Club.
Yeah.
Is that the one you're talking about?
I
don't have my calendar in front of me. I think it's the 6th.
Yeah.
It's August 6th at 6 p.m.
I think so. Yeah.
But. And we're getting the time right now. I'm just going to talk. What I'm going to talk about is how it happened, kind of a little bit about what I talked to you about, how I made the decision, and then what the campaign trail is like. Because it's kind of exciting. It's and because we're doing it, you know, as a grassroots effort. There's lots of, you know, every day is serendipity. We never know what's going to happen when we're out knocking on doors. It is on Wednesday, August 6th at 6:30 p.m. at the Best Western Hotel on US 1 in Stewart.
Excellent. So when you told your family that you were going to run, were they supportive, I hope?
Well,
it's going to take a lot of work.
Yeah. I'll talk a little bit more about that at the Democratic Club, but we had no idea when we embarked on this journey what it was going to be like. But what I knew was that my motive was correct and that I have a lot of energy and that it needed to be done, that the voters needed to have a clear choice this time, you know, a clear choice. It's very clear. The differences with my opponent and myself are very clear, and I believe that it was important for people to be able to have a choice. A Democrat didn't run for this seat in the two previous election cycles. So the Republican went to Tallahassee without an opponent, and that just doesn't work for me.
Boy, it's so good to hear you say that, Ms. Higgins. I really can't tell you what it means to hear that. When I came up here and heard that for several of these districts that a Democrat hadn't run, you know, the reaction that comes to me is this. I don't care what people call themselves, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, but everybody wants to have clean water. Everybody wants to have air that can be breathed. Everyone wants to have an ocean nearby that they can actually swim in. And when the other side supports a corporatist agenda that is opposed to all of that, that doesn't care for all that, whose best argument is the government regulations it hurts them, my first reaction to them when I meet somebody who says that is, would you prefer poisonous water or would you like to be able to drink the water that's all around you? And they go, and I said, well, when next time you give your child medicine, would you rather have that medicine regulated to be safe or would you rather not? And suddenly regulations doesn't look quite so bad.
When I'm knocking on doors and talking to voters, and sometimes they'll make some kind of a comment about what's going on in Washington or something like that. And what I do is I take that right back to what's going on right here. How is the condition of the Indian River Lagoon working for you? And it starts a conversation that it changes the dynamic between me and the voter when I talk about the Indian River Lagoon. So I've been doing a lot of that when I'm doing the door-to-door because what's affecting us right here in Florida right now these are the decisions that are being made in Tallahassee. And I like pointing that out to people because I think sometimes people get focused on national politics and they forget what's going on here.
Well, Mary, we wish you the best of luck. And I want to hear from you when you get elected to Tallahassee. I want to be your first interview, okay?
That would be awesome. Can I give
my
website?
Okay, best of luck. I'm sorry?
Can I just give my website so people can
Please
check
do.
Out my website?
Please do.
Okay, it's maryhiggins82.com.
maryhiggins82.com. Best of luck, Mary.
Thank you so much.
Okay, excellent interview with Miss Mary Higgins. MaryHiggins82.com. And next we're going to bring in a fantastic activist journalist, a gentleman who has been around for a long time. When progressives first started coming together, Ray was there. Let me see if we can bring him into the conversation. Hey there, buddy. Hold on one second. I need to let me do this again here. I need to bring in the Be Our Host thing, too. One sec. One, two, one, two. Okay, Ray, I think we're in. Okay. Mr. Ray Siemens, Progress Florida, right? So tell us, what's new with Progress Florida, Ray? Well, great. That's awesome. Now, you're an online director, right? So there's plenty of other issues here in Florida to deal with. What are some of the other issues that you're working closely with right now? We've got a conference coming up next month and of course, a primary election. What do you hear in the primary election front up in your neck of the woods? You're in the roughly in the Ocala area, right? Now, I know that you've been very involved in the school board issues up your way. And what's new with Marion County Schools? Well, that's good. Tell me, you're one of the masterminds behind creating and then working to support the Awake the State movement. Is that campaign at quiescence right now, or is it anticipating another build? Where is Awake the State these days? Yeah, I know there's a water event coming up the 3rd of August to protect our oceans, and there's also an event, I think it's the 16th of August, is a progressive gathering in the Orlando area. Lots of stuff going on, and of course the primary on the 26th, don't forget to vote. Vote the 26th, and vote for good progressive activists, and let's leave the shills counting their pennies with their lobbyist buddies. those that can find their way out of a wallet, I guess. Ray, you know, you've been just a great activist, communicator for a long time. You've been training people to communicate. You know, I just can't thank you enough for the good work that you're doing. If there was a campaign that you would urge people to get behind right now, what would you urge them to do right now? Pick three. I was just wondering, I know you're such a busy guy and following so many issues. I saw a news story Thursday that the Dan A. Hughes Company is going to sue the state. And so that turns out it wasn't the war, it was just a skirmish, just a battle. So we'll have to continue to fight that issue. And you know, I was absolutely shocked, even as a longtime Floridian, that the wildlife, the state wildlife officer said, hey, a bunch of exploratory seismic explosions across the glade, no problem with us. Well, you'd think this was the Sunshine State or something, the way you talk, Ray. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Okay, talk to you later. Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard us talking about net neutrality earlier, so I'm going to go ahead and put on this little clip from John Oliver talking about net neutrality.
You can go online right now and buy a case of coyote urine. Do you know how difficult it used to be to obtain coyote urine? You literally had to give a coyote Gatorade and just wait. It was a mess. The system was a mess. But if you've turned on the news lately, you may have heard some worrying references to the internet changing.
The Federal Communications Commission has agreed to move forward on a proposal that could change the way we use the internet. At risk, the basic principle of net neutrality.
Net neutrality.
Net neutrality.
Yes, net neutrality. The only two words that promise more boredom in the English language are featuring Sting. And hearing people talk about it is somehow even worse.
As anticipated, the notice proposes to ground the net neutrality rules in Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Oh my God, that is the most boring thing I've ever seen. That is even boring by C-SPAN standards. I would rather read a book by Thomas Friedman than sit through that hearing. I would rather listen to a pair of dockers tell me about the weird dream it had. I'd rather sit down with my niece and watch Caillou, a children's show about a bald Canadian child who lives a life devoid of any incident. F*** you, Caillou! Grow some hair and leave the house! Find out what the world's about! Come on! But here's the thing. Net neutrality is actually hugely important. Essentially, it means that all data has to be treated equally, no matter who creates it. It's why the internet is a weirdly level playing field. And startups can supplant established brands. That's how Facebook supplanted MySpace, which supplanted Friendster, which supplanted actually having any friends. Do you remember physically having friends? It was awful. You couldn't tap people's faces to make them go away. The point is, the internet in its current form is not broken. And the FCC is currently taking steps to fix that.
The FCC is endorsing new rules that could clear the way for a two-tier system.
The rules would open the door for the first time for internet providers like Comcast and Verizon to charge tech companies to send content to consumers more quickly. Netflix, for example, might pay a premium to ensure that its customers can stream movies more reliably at a cost a startup competitor might not be able to afford.
No, this cannot happen. How else is my startup streaming video service Netflix going to compete? It's going to be America's one-stop resource for videos of men getting hit in the nuts. You don't even know you want it yet, that's why it's brilliant. Ending net neutrality would allow big companies to buy their way into the fast lane, leaving everyone else in the slow lane, although telecom companies would prefer that you put it in a slightly different way.
When you say fast lane and slow lane, it's a good illustration, but what you really should be talking about is a fast lane for everybody and a hyperspeed lane for others.
Bullshit. If we let cable companies offer two speeds of service, they won't be Usain Bolt and Usain Bolt on a motorbike. They'll be Usain Bolt and Usain bolted to an anchor. And telecom companies will say they would never slow down a website's speed in order to get more money out of them. But let me tell you a little story. Recently, Comcast was negotiating with Netflix. This graph shows Netflix download speeds on various providers. That black line plummeting downwards was their speed on Comcast during the negotiation. See if you can guess when Netflix agreed to Comcast demands. I'll give you a hint. It's right there. That has all the ingredients of a mob shakedown. Oh, Netflix, nice show about life in a ladies' prison. Such a shame if there was going to be something happen to your connection there. So frustrating that would be. And it's not just anti-corporate hippies who think that abandoning net neutrality is a bad idea.
The net neutrality movement is leery of big corporate players, but in this debate, it's on the same side as some of them.
Google, Facebook, Netflix, Amazon all signed onto this letter supporting net neutrality.
What's being proposed is so egregious, activists and corporations have been forced onto the same side. That's basically Lex Luthor knocking on Superman's apartment door and going, listen, I know we have our differences, but we have got to get rid of that arsehole in apartment 3B. He's too loud, Soup. He's just too loud. And you might wonder, well, look, if everyone is against this, how is it even possibly happening? Well, consider who would benefit from this change. Cable companies. Verizon wants a two-tier system so badly, they sued the government to force the rule change that's currently being discussed. These companies have Washington in their pockets to a conveniently almost unbelievable degree.
Comcast has spent $18,810,000 in lobbying last year. That's more than any other company for defense contractor north of Grumman.
So just to be clear, the ranking of who buys government influence is number one, military-industrial complex, and number two, the provider of lizard lick towing. Look, I could show you the troublingly cozy relationship between cable companies and Washington in any number of ways. I could show you the president golfing with the CEO of Comcast, or saying at a fundraiser at a cable executive's house that he'd been there so many times, the only thing I haven't done in this house is have Seder dinner. But perhaps the most succinct way is this.
The president has picked Tom Wheeler, a former top lobbyist for cable and wireless companies, to be the next chair of the Federal Communications Commission.
Yes. The guy who used to run the cable industry's lobbying arm is now running the agency tasked with regulating it. That is the equivalent of needing a babysitter and hiring a dingo.
Kira, thanks for stopping over. Just make sure they're in bed by 8. There's $20 on the table for kibble, so please don't eat my baby.
With the fact that they are practically overseeing their own oversight, it is hardly surprising that cable companies are basically monopolies now. A federal study found that 96% of the population had access to two or fewer cable broadband providers. It's almost as if they've agreed to stay out of each other's way like drug cartels. But hold on, no, that's not fair. That's not fair. I mean, if hypothetically a cable company like Comcast were planning to merge with a company like, let's say, Time Warner, it's not like their CEO would sit down and mark out who had which turf, right?
Both in video and in broadband, we don't compete with Time Warner. You have to start with that very fundamental point. They're in New York, we're in Philadelphia, they're in LA, we're in San Francisco. You can't buy a Comcast in New York, you can't buy a Time Warner in Philadelphia. So there's no reduction in competition.
Exactly. You can't reduce competition when nobody is competing. You could not be describing a monopoly more clearly if you were wearing a metal top hat while driving a metal car after winning second prize in a beauty contest. And maybe it's because of their lack of competition that they get away with providing such shitty service. We pay more for our internet service than almost anybody else on Earth. And yet, the download speeds we get lag behind Estonia. Estonia, a country where, from the looks of it, they still worry about Shrek attacks. Is it any wonder that in a massive recent customer satisfaction surveys, Comcast and Time Warner Cable came in dead last. And when you look at the companies that were scored better than them, people were basically saying, yes, Bank of America took my home. Yes, Taco Bell gave me diarrhea. And sure, GM tried to kill me, but Time Warner and Comcast are the worst. They are the worst.
The worst.
And I know. The cable companies will say, oh, they support net neutrality protections, or they remain committed to the open internet, or just the tip. But let me remind you, they also say that they'll be at your house between 2 and 6 tomorrow afternoon. And does any part of you really expect them to fucking turn up? And yet, our government looks set to end net neutrality and let these companies run hog wild. And we're just going to let them. And you know why? It all comes back to this.
It seeks comment on ways to construe additional language in Section 706 and even suggests using Section 230B to broaden the scope of the Commission's usurped authority.
Oh my God, how are you still so dull? And that's the problem. The cable companies have figured out the great truth of America. If you want to do something evil, put it inside something boring. Apple could put the entire text of Mein Kampf inside the iTunes user agreement, and you just go, agree. And that's why advocates should not be talking about protecting net neutrality. They shouldn't even use that phrase. They should call it preventing cable company f***ery. Because that is what it is. And it might actually compel people to want to do something. And the interesting thing here is there might actually be something you can still do.
The FCC will be taking public comment for 120 days.
That's right. The FCC are literally inviting internet comments at this address. And at this point, and I can't believe I'm about to do this, I would like to address the internet commenters out there directly. Good evening, monsters. This may be the moment you've spent your whole lives training for. You have been out there ferociously commenting on dance videos of adorable three-year-olds, saying things like, every child could dance like this little loser after 1 week of practice. Or you've been polluting Frozen's Let It Go with comments like, Ice Castle would give her hypothermia and she'd dead in an hour. Or, and I know you've done this one, commenting on video on this show saying, fuck this asshole anchor, go suck your president's dick. You're just friends with the terrorists. Now, I don't know what any of that means. But I don't think it's a compliment. But this is the moment you were made for, commenters. Like Ralph Macchio, you've been honing your skills, waxing cars and painting fences. Well, guess what? Now it's time to do some f***ing karate. For once in your life, we need you to channel that anger, that badly spelled bile that you normally reserve for unforgivable attacks on actresses you seem to think have put on weight, or politicians that you disagree with, or photos of your ex-girlfriend getting on with her life, or non-white actors being cast as fictional characters. And I'm talking to you, Ron Paul fan 2016, and you, One Direction forever, and I'm talking to you, One Direction sucks balls. We need you to get out there and for once in your lives, focus your indiscriminate rage in a useful direction. Seize your moments, my lovely trolls. Turn on caps lock and fly, my pretty...
And a little more.
Nation, I love the internet, and the internet loves me back. Why else would it offer me so much sex? That's why I was shocked last week when I heard this gossip about the internet from its frenemy, television.
The way we use the internet could change after federal appeals court struck down net neutrality rules.
The fallout over a big decision that may change how the web works and the future of so-called net neutrality.
We could be witnessing the end of the internet as we know it.
Nation, I hope you know what this means because I do not. Maybe the TV knows.
Net neutrality is the idea that broadband internet service providers, Comcast, Time Warner Cable, Verizon, and others should treat everything that flows across the internet equally.
Thanks, TV. You see, under net neutrality, every site on the internet has to be equally accessible to the user, whether it be a huge behemoth like Google or some obscure little mom-and-pop site like Bing. But folks, this recent court ruling ends all of that.
Net neutrality advocates say this ruling could also allow internet service providers to slow everything and then charge you extra to allow faster access to a particular site like Amazon.
You might have to pay more for a specific website. There are a million different ways that you might have to pay.
Folks, I will not stand for my content being held hostage for cash. Yeah. Must rise as one against the cable companies and... Folks, I've rethought my position on net neutrality. What I meant to say was, like all Americans, I love my cable company. They add so much to my life. For instance, all the time I get to spend with my family during the 3 minutes it takes for my DVR to process a channel change. And it'll be better. Think about it. Verizon says this ruling allows broadband providers to offer new and innovative services to their customers while allowing more room for innovation and keeping the internet a hub of innovation. See? Net neutrality's only been dead a week and already 3 innovative uses of the word innovation. It used to have to mean something. Folks, I'm so inspired. Folks, I am so inspired by this new paradigm of holding content hostage that I've implemented a few innovations of my own here at The Rapport, such as my new Twofinity phone service, where my employees continue to enjoy unfettered access to the first 2 digits of any number they dial. Are you on fire? Then just dial 91. Need another one? Reasonable charges apply.
You say tomato? Old El Paso says diced tomatoes, standing stuffed chicken tacos.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up for tonight. We'll see you next week when Progressive News Network says to you, had an interesting question somebody threw at me the other day, somebody who's neither a progressive nor in media, and they said, well, who's your most important guest? And I know where they were coming from. I said, the audience, because I'm not interested in getting celebrities. I'm not interested in getting public officials. That's not who I want to reach out to. I want activists. I want people who are frozen out of media. Occasionally, it's important where someone is really doing some heavy lifting, happens to be on a national or international scale. Well, that to me is different because they're still basically an activist. Mm-hmm. I don't count the legislators or the judges or the lawyers as the most important people I have on. That's not who is important. You're important to the show because you are a person who is every day engaged in trying to make a better world, and that's why I do the show.
Thank you. Well, I always love your show and listen to it whenever I can.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, well, friends,
well,
thank
friends,
you so
thank
much
you
for
so joining us.
Talk to you next week. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.